You know, I just want to come back to what Chad was talking about, the evangelism. That's very near and dear to me, and I'm sure it is to each man on the call. But yesterday we were interviewing people about sanitation, and one of the people on the call brought up an issue that I have to be honest with you, I hadn't thought about. And so, guys, when we talk about coming back together, we talk about social distancing. She asked this question: what about the single people in your congregation? They have been alone for 50 days now. So if you open 1st of June, are they still going to be alone but sitting in a crowd? What is that going to look like? And what are we going to do to incorporate the singles in our church to make them not feel alone in a crowd? Clay, I don't want to pick on you, but you have a lot of college students, a lot of younger families, a lot of single units, and multi-campus. So maybe you can begin to maybe speak to that, and then we'll open it up.
Yeah, and we have, being close to a college campus, as several of us are right around Charleston Southern or College of Charleston. We have a few students that are even making their way back now that live in the area or have kind of a summer job that they've had. The things that we're trying to think through right now are checking with them to find ways to connect, whether it's around groceries they may need. We're finding a lot of them are kind of coming back that are maybe we're working at a restaurant that they're not real sure how that's going to go. And a few of them who maybe are in a leasing situation that they're maybe running at. They're in some unknowns as well. And I think finding among that population of people how they're doing, knowing that the simplicity of some groceries and the possibility of maybe a family that you have connected to the church that has an extra bedroom or some of those things might actually become a resource of really caring for them in a short season. That's a little bit of what we're navigating right now and seeing, and that's not at a large level. We're just starting to see little blips of that. But yeah, I'd love any other thoughts or insight on, I think that both the individual and then I think one of the things that Jeff brought up, I think the idea of families in the service that may, I'd love to hear even some ideas of what that's looking like. We've been probably teetering very heavy on let's wait until we can kind of come back as in some manner as much as we have been. But I love that idea of, you know, what does it look like to have options where maybe one service is like we have and one might be including the family? Maybe some options or ideas of what that's looked like.
Yeah. I'm an expert on singles. I got married when I was 20 years old. So, you know, again, I think part of it is to go, I think one of the things I would do is I would talk to as many singles as I could and just say, hey, let's talk about this honest thing. We're only going to be able to put X amount of people in an auditorium. We're going to have social distancing. The last thing we want to have is you sitting by yourself in the middle and then families surrounding you in every direction. That sounds awkward to me. Can you help me figure out what's the best way to do this? And I just don't think this is one we're going to solve for singles. I think this is one a group of them will help us figure out. And it's going to, as we all know, some of this is going to be awkward for singles. It just is. And Clay, on the family side, I think it's fun to think through. A lot of churches, you know, have done family services forever. Some of you guys may still have kids in the service for a part of the service and then dismiss them or have a children's sermon. I think some of those things, we figure out how to bring that, make it fresh. Clay, a lot of your families will think that's the most cutting edge thing they've ever seen. The pastor does a kid's sermon in the middle of the service. And, you know, I mean, our pastor is just out there. And so I think we can learn a lot from what we used to do 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Some of us still do. I mean, it's effective. I think a couple of things I'm thinking through in that model is one is we have to look at service length again, you know, and some of us are like, I will be so glad when we can stop worrying about, you know, how long will people watch online? You put some three-year-old, my grandkids are 3, 7, and 9, and they were over last night. And you put them in a church service and go an hour and a half, good luck with that. And tell me how that works out for you. And so we're going to have to think through that. And then I think providing things in the service, both from the stage, but also just what can we equip families with to discuss later after the service? Are there some things that we can keep them connected with the curriculum that we normally use? I talk a lot about Orange because that's who I'm connected personally with, but you know, are there ways that the family can continue to teach what we would have taught in kids' church? Can they do it at home? And then let's give them, you know, some stuff to do during the service. But again, Clay, I don't think there's a magic bullet, but I do think it's something we have to talk through. I was going to say too, Chad, when you do your outdoor service, something we're thinking through for our next drive-in is we have to provide something for kids in that outdoor environment, especially, again, you put a 3-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 9-year-old outside, and you tell them to social distance. That's hilarious. And so we got to think through what does that look like?
Well, coming from the normative sized church and replanting and revitalizing dying churches, you know, age graded children's work is not something that's ever on the front burner for us. And what we've always said was we just take a totally different approach. And rather than to try to entertain the kids during church or do something to keep them involved, we just tell the parents, look, when your kids, they don't understand everything going on in the March Madness, right? I mean, they don't understand the nuance of the March Madness. They don't understand all the bracketing, but they know it's important to dad, right? They learn that really early on that this is important to dad, and that builds a value in it. And so what we say is just having your children with you in worship at age 2, 3, and 4, yeah, they may be squirming and they, but we're cool with that. But just them seeing that this is important to you and your children seeing you worship is more meaningful and important in their life and formative than you could ever possibly imagine. And I think we downplay that sometimes. We feel like we got to give kids something to do. Actually, I think just children seeing their parents worship is critically important. And so maybe in this season, if you can't have children's worship, you can't have age-graded Sunday school, you sort of lean into that and emphasize that. And that's what we've always done. And then you have to couple that, though, with giving parents really good tools on how to be gospel parents, how to talk to your children at home, how to have family. And this has been such a great gift right now, as so many pastors and churches are doing family worship in a much more intensive way. But how to do family worship at home? How to parent your children? I lean more toward that anyway, toward bringing kids into worship, letting them see their parents worship, and so forth. So it's a good chance and opportunity to do that. Because you're right, you have kids outside; they're not going to social distance. You're just going to be chasing them all over the place. And here's another real issue. Are you ready? Even in the worship service, you're going to have children who are going to run around to people. And you're going to have some older people there, some people who have some conditions and so forth. And what are you going to do when a little 3-year-old gets away from their mom and runs over to another person? I mean, you really got to think through these things, and there's no quick, easy answer for it. But that's because little children want to see their friends, you know. I got grandkids, and so the other night, you know, we drove by, talked to him through the storm door. Yeah, that went really well for a 3-year-old who couldn't see his granddad. I mean, you know, he understood COVID really well, that I can't get outside and see them. So you bring these children into an environment where they're with their friends and other people again and tell them, oh, yeah, but you got to stay several feet away. We got some real issues with that for sure. As if you didn't know that, by the way.
Right. So as we consider all the dynamics that every church is trying to process, all of these different sides of this issue. You know, the thing in South Carolina here is, again, that the governor has deemed the church as essential, and rightly so. At the same time, we're also considered assemblies. And so, you know, if we go to a concert or a sporting event, Lord willing in the future here, you know, that's going to be a whole nother game, literally, to get into assemblies, but that's only once in a while. We're talking about something we do as leaders, right, every week. So thinking through that dynamic is very important. So here's what I'm picturing. I'd like for Jeff and Mark to speak to this just for a moment, is as you walk into the conference room of a church office, I'm picturing two whiteboards and what they look like. One is you have every thought that's possibly to even consider or question. It's written on the board and there's no order to it at all. It's just everything you're trying to think about. That's one whiteboard I see. The other one is the categorical mind that's got things broken down into three or four categories or phases in order to re-enter, but there's nothing underneath it because we're not sure what to put there. I think maybe it'd be helpful, maybe if you both could just speak briefly to this, that how would you go, if you walked into one of those conference rooms, what would you tell leaders to begin thinking about doing? How to begin thinking about either a phase-in plan or stages, or speak to that a little bit. Jeff, would you start us off on that piece?
Yeah, and I've been thinking a lot about that. And sometimes we get stuck on the idea of it's all or nothing. And I think we should think hard about phases. In my head, there's four phases to this. Phase one was where we've been, which is no gatherings at all. Everything's online. Phase two to me, and depends on where you are. For Colorado right now, we're moving into phase two, which allows gatherings up to 10. So the churches I'm working with, we're figuring out how to make 10 a win, how to do kit family ministry with 10. We're not worried about the 200 at this point because we don't know when that will happen. And we don't have the buildings for the most place part to do social distancing with a group of 200. Phase three is a group of 50 to 60 to 70. So we're thinking through what are some places that we could meet? Could we do all of those at our building, or could we disperse that through the community in restaurants and clubhouses, things like that? What would it look like to continue to be multi-site? Because we're all multi-site right now, we're meeting in homes. But to begin to gather, do we have to gather everybody back there? And then the phase four would be when we're able to have larger gatherings with way less social distancing than we have now. And so actually I have a little bit of a resource. My website is ministrytogether.com. I created a little resource that kind of helps teams step through those four phases. What do we need to be thinking about at each phase? How do we put that? There's a little video I did together with a teaching on that. And just one other piece that's coming, it's free. I work also with Generis, and they've created a forward-thinking format that goes a little deeper into how do we think through the seasons and the possibilities in a framework, not just, oh gosh, let's go back and do what we did before. So those are a couple of resources that are out there that I think could be helpful for churches as we think systematically through how do we go from here to there.
Yeah, and again, you know, in an environment where I am, where there are some government restrictions, it guides our thinking a little bit. You know, we can have 10% capacity, and then we can go up to 50 people or more, and that helps you. In your situation, where it's really up to you, that's a much more challenging, yet more freeing opportunity. So if I would look at those, I would just begin with gathered worshiping. What's the one thing? And just do mission critical on gathered worship. Start out with that. Obviously, with the distancing, you're going to have to do with. If you got chairs, it's obviously much easier. You just set the chairs in groups. If you got pews, it's a little harder to get people to social distance, but you got to have to mark those out. Again, I just want to be overly simplistic, but plenty of hand sanitizer, the where you don't have to touch it, making sure the doors are open so nobody touches them, making sure you have good signs in the bathroom so one person at a time. And having those signs everywhere and just keep reemphasizing that over and over until you can get to some sort of phase two at some point later in the summer, whenever that takes place. But to continue to continue to do the online preaching, because there are going to be some people who just want to stay home all summer. So obviously you keep doing that. Continue to help people understand how to do home worship and in-home worship with their families, because people need to continue to do that. So it's really both and in the next few weeks, and let those who want to come start coming and ramp back up. But surely plenty of options for those who just aren't comfortable doing that or can't. And the last thing I would say is I couldn't agree more with what I said about training your volunteers. So whoever is at the door, whoever's working in the preschool area, who's ever doing whatever, man, make sure they know what they're doing and how they're doing it, and they do it well and do it right. And we'll all try to figure and learn this together. Rainer's got some great stuff. You know that. And go to his website. I work with him, and he's got some. He has new stuff comes out every hour, actually. So he's got some new stuff today on how to do these steps and how to accomplish this. So yeah, look up Rainer if you haven't already on leadership. He'll be good with that. That's and he great. And I actually did some podcasts that'll come out next week that focus on some of these things too.
That's great. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Stephen.
One question one thing we talked about just briefly, but I'm sure a lot of churches in our area are going to have questions about, is the singing. I've had several of our people contact us already saying, you know, we're hearing that, you know, a sneeze is worse, a cough, than singing. So should we even sing in worship at the beginning? Are there resources on that y'all looked at already, or?
Yeah. Anyone?
I hadn't heard that. I need to look into that a little bit. I think it's going to be really, that'd be like going to Baskin Robbins on a diet. It's like we're all together, but we can't sing, you know? It's going to be even more painful. Yeah. So I'm not sure about that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess we could bring the hymnals back and we'd all sing looking down into a hymnal. That would probably work all right. So we'd have our faces would be down. That's what we should do. Forget the screens, go back to the hymnal and all look down at the hymnal. So there, yeah, that problem solved. There you go.
Pastor Eric.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks guys for all this information. And I'm just soaking it up here. But Steve, your question leads into my question, which is a little more philosophical than it is practical. I mean, at what point do we undermine the very purpose of what we're doing by all of the restrictions that we place on our people in doing it? That's where our elders have been struggling. If you have people sitting in their cars in the parking lot, does that undermine the whole concept of coming together as the people of God? They'd be just as comfortable sitting at home, basically experiencing the same thing. So these are questions. If we take away singing, if we put that single person 6 foot away from everybody else, are we actually doing more harm than good? And that's been our conversation. If you keep putting water in the soup, before long, it's not worth eating. And we're concerned about that as we begin to plan things and break people apart, because the whole purpose of the local church on Sunday is the gathering together of God's people. And we're fighting with that for worship, for singing of songs, for those kinds of things. And so my question is how do we find that line of enough is too much when it comes to restrictions? Do we make our churches so restrictive that they can no longer accomplish the purposes that we want them to accomplish? And that's, I hope you understood that question. I was kind of rambling there for a minute, but where do we draw that line?
I think it's a great question, Eric. And, you know, as Stephen was talking about the singing piece, you know, you begin to wonder if we can't sing, should we gather, you know? And it's, I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm just saying there just comes that point, right? Where again, like Eric, you said, when are we doing more harm than good? I'd say on the other side of that, and I'm not, when we did our first drive-in experience, it was a worship night. And the first time I heard about that, I thought that was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I mean, why in the world do we go to all the effort to go sit in our cars in a parking lot with the windows up? And we did it the worst way possible. We played pre-recorded music and our pastor stood on the top of a church pickup truck and talked over the radio. I mean, that is the worst church experience you can imagine. And I sat in my car, and I got to tell you, tears running down my cheeks. I'll probably start crying sitting here. And without getting overly spiritual, it was the where two or three are gathered in my name, I'm in the midst of them. The Holy Spirit shows up. The Holy Spirit showed up in the parking lot of a Hobby Lobby, which, by the way, we chose Hobby Lobby because we figured they wouldn't sue a church. And so in the parking lot of a Hobby Lobby, a bunch of people sitting in their cars, listening to pre-recorded music, honking their horns to say amen. And it was a spiritual experience. So Eric, I hear what you're saying and I don't disagree in any way. And I think there is something that says, you know what, if we have to gather and not sing and keep our hands in our pockets and stand 12 feet apart, and yet we're able to be in the same, two or three are gathered in the name of Jesus, I just think holy things happen. I just think powerful things happen. I think, Eric, we're on the exact same page. The question is, for how long? For how long do we continue to to do this? At what point do we say, gosh, we're safe, but we're not the church anymore? And so I get the tension, but I do, I think it's worth, Stephen, I can't answer the singing question. I'd research the heck out of that. I'm going to, and find out what, you know, what's the reality there. But I tell you what, if I could gather 40, right now today, if I knew that I could gather 50 adults in a room safely, and we couldn't sing and we couldn't shake hands, we couldn't hug, but we could share communion and we could listen to the gospel and we could pray, I'd do it right now. I would walk off this call and go do it right now. That's how hungry I am to experience that again. And I think your people feel the same way.
You know, just to, I understand, because Eric, I've thought through so many times exactly what you're saying, how restrictive is too restrictive. But I keep going back to where I believe probably most of the men on this call are at. I have been in countries that you snuck into rooms, you blacked out the windows, you whispered, and you worshiped. There was no singing, but there was the fellowship of believers gathered together with a common goal and purpose of exalting the King. And I think there may well be a new mindset that has to come at a point. And so just for whatever that's worth, thinking of even the secret church that we've heard so much about, there can very much be worship, and it may look different, but I do believe people are hungry just to look each other in the eye again, other than on a computer screen.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great word. It's something to wrestle with. And every church, it's every church's decision, right? And Eric, you spoke well to the fact that it's a philosophy, it's a conviction that you're trying to use to guide you and make that decision. And I think that's really important, I think, for all leaders as they process that. So whether your plan's modified or you say, here's why we're not going to do anything but keep the online feed going into homes. And then once we have the freedom to be able to come back in a safe way together and be able to do the normative things, that could be the very thing that's prescriptive for you. And that's what you have to follow and go with. At the same time, I think it's important, as we've talked about in collaboration, we have to be supportive of each other in the sense that if I make a decision to start earlier rather than once you're starting later, we need to celebrate and encourage whatever process or decisions being made in order to show the fact that we're in this together. So everyone's going to make them different in how they process it. But I do think there's value in making sure that we hear the collective wisdom before we make those decisions and those calls. Pastor Tom, I know you've been working with your team on formulating a plan and putting together what your next steps are. Maybe you have a question or a thought you'd like to share with us today as well.
One thing I did yesterday was I sent out an email and a snail mail to the churches on James Island, not just the Baptist churches, but the James Island Ministerial Association, and asked these very same questions. What are your plans? What are your procedures? What are your best steps? And I volunteered then to collate them, send them back out as a collaborative effort, so that on the island, all the churches on the island, different denominations, have an opportunity to be aware of what we're doing and maybe learn from each other. My gratitude for Seacoast offering to help us advance on our live streaming. And so their guy was very generous in speaking with our guy and giving some input. So that collaboration has been a big deal. But one of the things for me is, There's what I call a formal mitigation of this disease and an informal. A formal mitigation is asking a lot of the questions that we're asking, but there is a reality mitigation that I'm not really seeing a lot of people that are, look how close you two guys are sitting. I mean, that's not a criticism. That's just what I call is the informal mitigation. Yeah. Where we're the exception, you know, I'm pretty sure I don't have this. So, you know, it's okay to do whatever the next step is. And so that's one of the struggles between a formal mitigation. We talked about the singing and the praising. I've not heard anyone say, is anyone requiring the church family to wear a mask? That I'm in favor of wearing masks, but man, that really is, that's a muffler on singing, right? So I'm, you know, so I'm, I think there's, where our team meets next Thursday. We've gathered information from our leaders, and now I'll be putting it together. And then our team meets next Thursday to start hammering out. We're not in a hurry. I'm just not in a hurry to roll out whatever it is we do. I want to make sure that we do it right. Bostic asked a question when he was with us. He talked about having a consent, you know, that nobody comes forced, this free will, but is anyone using a consent form at this point, or is that just a passing thought?
And Bostic is a Christian attorney that was with us last week on a call.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's right.
One of the things we talked about with consent forms is we're going to have some type of a consent form for our children in preschool when that starts back up, to have parents sign some permission or request or some form that allows us to offer care to their children. That's as far as we got with any kind of a consent. We did survey our congregation. That was very interesting if you haven't tried that yet. But that's kind of where we started.
Nope.
So that's where that, but I like the consent idea. At what point do we share responsibility for the safety of our people? If we're saying we're going to do everything we can do to make this a risk-free environment, that puts a lot of responsibility on us downstream, given the fact that there may be some illness or something that would come from one of our meetings. And so are we liable at that point? We thought about that a little bit. I really haven't thought about a consent form for everyone, but we are planning to do that with our children's ministry.
Thank you.
Here in Kansas City, they started out requiring it, and then they realized that was a major public relations nightmare. So they backed off from requiring it, but they're suggesting strongly that every church keep a record of everybody who was in attendance on that day. So they can do cross, if there's an outbreak, they can do that. It's not a bad idea. We want to know who people are anyway. We always get people try to sign up. Well, this is a way to get it to do it, maybe. But that way, if there is an outbreak, you can say who was in your church service on that day. Probably not a bad idea. And let's just be frank about it. I'll just remind you again, you can look it up online. They had over 400 meatpackers in St. Joe, Missouri that all tested positive, and none of them were showing symptoms. So we just don't know. When we show up, we just don't know. And I think at the end, I think we haven't said in this whole 3.5 hours we've been on this afternoon, something we haven't said was protect the vulnerable, right? I mean, you're going to have some elderly people who want to come. I mean, do everything you can do to protect the vulnerable, those who have pre-existing conditions. I think we got to put a lot of emphasis on that right now. And, you know, young people, healthy people who come, and so many of them are going to be asymptomatic anyway. I know I'm getting into the woods on that. But we really got to protect the vulnerable. A lot of our churches are full of older people who have been alone for all these weeks. They don't have anybody else in their house with them. They're dying to get back. That's a poor choice of words. They really want to get back together. And we got to be careful to protect them in every way. And that's my biggest concern, is that they would come to church and somebody who's asymptomatic, you know, they get it from them and then they die. And so trying to protect those people who are most vulnerable is really important.
Well, guys, thank you so much for your time today. We've covered a lot of good things, and I want to thank Jeff Surratt again. Thank you, Jeff, for being a part of this and giving your wisdom and counsel. Mark Clifton, thank you for giving of your time again and your wisdom in this. And we're going to provide through our website, both Charleston Baptist and Screven, links that you can go to that were mentioned today, so you can get more information.
Let me give you one yeah. more link. Yeah. I work with a church in California that does a lot of replanting called Sandals Church. And they've come out with some really good, their pastor's come out in a very restrictive place of California. He's making a really strong case for getting back together and how that can be done safely. So just Google it, look it up, or maybe you find that link, Craig, and put it on there, Sandals Church in LA.
Do it. We'll do it. Hey, pastors, thank you for being a part of this as well. Know that we're in it with you. We're praying for you. And grateful that we can collaborate at this time together and sharing some ideas together. So God bless each of you. Thank you for being a part of our call. And we pray God uses this in a great way for you personally. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good deal. Thank you. Good day.